that was, you know, strong enough to make sure that we were focused on the right things, but light enough to just not get in the way. So, you know, if you're doing an 8-week POC, you don't want to have to do a lot of form filling and all the rest of it.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Mind Gravity Podcast. We have two amazing guests today. First off, it's Dmitry Narenko, who is the founder and CEO of an up-and-coming fintech startup called UpSwat. And my second guest on the show, and I'm really excited about this, is because it's double whammy. So my second guest today is Martin Bailey, who's the director of innovation at Temenos. And he's been at the firm for about 20 years and has seen a ton of innovation activities, not just within his own corporation, but outside. And we'll be talking to Dmitry and Martin about how the two companies have partnered and what synergies are required to build a solid partnership between a large corporation such as Temenos and an early stage startup like UpSwat. More on that, let's tune in. Welcome to the Mind Gravity Podcast, guys. I'm so excited to have you, Dmitry and Martin, on my show. This is the first time I'm hosting, you know, a panel session, and I'm really excited for our conversation that's coming up. So Dmitry, you're the founder and CEO of UpSwat, and Martin, you are leading the venture innovation efforts at Temenos. Tell us a bit more about your background and what you guys do at your respective endeavors.
Yes, so my name is Dmitry. I am one of the founders, and yes, I'm leading UpSwat efforts to change the way the banks interact with their small, medium-sized and mid-market companies. And we launched our company 20 months ago. Right now we are 27 people, and I am tremendously grateful for this invitation to describe what we do in our company and together with Temenos and Martin.
Thanks, Dmitry. Thanks for the opportunity. It's great to be involved. So I'm from Temenos. I've worked there for 20 years. For the majority of that time, I headed up their technology division, part of product, where I kind of looked after all the non-functional aspects of our products. And more recently, about 3 years ago, I moved into the innovation side of things. And my job is really to introduce new technology and new architectures to Temenos and work out which ones we should pursue and which ones we shouldn't, and to try and break it down and make it more accessible to the organization so that we can develop good product.
Brilliant. Thank you for that introduction, guys. So coming back to you, Dmitry, what exactly is UpSwat? What's the genesis story behind it?
UpSwat is the solution that is trying to, let's say, make banks more efficient in their interaction with their clients, specifically micro businesses, self-employed, medium-sized businesses, small businesses, and so-called mid-market companies. So our technology gives an option to dive very deep inside of accountancy, ERP, CRM, e-commerce, and lots of other apps that the clients of the banks regularly use. Because the data from QuickBooks, Xero, NetSuite, Oracle Financial Cloud, Salesforce, PayPal, Square, is something that is unavailable to the bank. But this is highly crucial data needed for scoring, underwriting, marketing purposes, and helping the clients of the banks to become more efficient. So we created the platform that in case of the big banks is usually deployed in their private cloud. But it's also available as SaaS, and fintechs are using us through a single RESTful API. And this platform modifies online banking and onboarding processes the way that each of us, if we are businesses, are motivated to provide opt-in, continuous, only API-enabled access to our financials, sales funnel, number of the visitors at our website, how much do we sell on Amazon, our accounts, receivables, and payables. Because we influence the terms of the deals with the bank, and on the top of this, we can get cash flow predictions. The tools that allows us to predict sales on Amazon, the tools that allows us to understand which marketing campaign is better than others, and everything in one single screen. So the solution is designed to scale, let's say, the thing which is called open banking and make it much more open through alternative data, which is available, which is usually unavailable to the banks, but available to their clients. And right now we are doing this with almost 30 banks. in 6 countries. And that means that we are growing pretty fast because we are only 20 months old company. But I believe with the help of Martin, we will grow even faster.
That's brilliant. And what was the starting point? Did you notice any issues while you were doing stuff before UpSWAT that led you to start UpSWAT? Or has this been your, you always wanted to be an entrepreneur and you saw a market, that opportunity, and just went after it? What was the genesis behind it?
Yeah, so this is my second startup. Unfortunately, the first one failed, and there were some some reasons. That was the conflict between me and my previous partner. And like in any other situation, both sides, I believe, were wrong. But that gave us a huge experience, so that I proceed and started a new company. The previous funds that invested in my previous startup, they joined my new company. And having experience, not successful experience with my previous startup, we could build this one much more efficiently and much faster. Before the startup experience, I was working in debt collection business. So my job was to explain to people that if you have the debt, you need to pay it back. So I can say that this is a very happy job, but that gives a very nice experience how you can negotiate the terms of the deal. How can you make the people do what you want and get something in a mutually beneficial way for this? And that experience gave me lots of positive opinions, let's say, and it taught me what shouldn't be done. On the top of this, I also understood that working for the corporation is not my sweet spot. Let's say I prefer to do something very risky, but do this myself and aim a huge piece of the pie. And this is really exciting when you create your own business instead of building business for someone. But obviously, corporation experience in the corporation is something that everyone needs. That helps you to build the process and understand where you should go. So yeah, I have corporate experience. I have experience as an entrepreneur in real economy businesses and 2 businesses I sold. And later I started working in the startups, and this is something that makes me excited and my wife very tired.
So, yeah. That's fascinating to hear. You know, a lot of times I talk to entrepreneurs and a lot of times you'll see that they never not really had experience within the processes or how large companies work, or even much idea about like the challenges that goes into starting your own startup. But it seems like you've already done this a few times over and have already tested the water on the corporate side. Wasn't for you, you went into do something that excites you a lot more. Very fascinating. Martin, on the other hand, now you are a software service provider for large financial institutions and tools for banks, et cetera. How do you see a startup like UpSWAT fitting into that broader ecosystem?
So because of what I do, you know, I welcome approaches from interesting startups, particularly fintechs that kind of do something interesting. And I must admit, when Dimitri kind of reached out to me, it was very timely, because we were working in the SME space to kind of try and work out what would be really good for SME banking and what kind of offerings could we put together. So it was very timely when he reached out. And I think ecosystem of our customers is very fertile ground for a company like Dimitri's that has a very rich data aggregation ability, and also the analytics that come with that really help the banks to understand their SME customers much better than they could by just looking at the stark banking data. You know, it really helps them to understand them and understand their needs and be able to cater to those needs. And banks that do that, banks that kind of really differentiate themselves amongst the SME community, are really gonna have some good success, and it's a much more profitable market than say retail banking. So, you know, it's a very attractive market for the banks. So I see quite a bright future for UpSWAT.
Yeah, no, I think I resonate a lot with in terms of seeing the potential of doing something based on the data that gets accumulated or aggregated through the platform. And I've been in the venture innovation, venture building, venture investment side myself, but there are obviously challenges of integrating with such small startups and seeing something fruitful come on the other side. So have you seen those challenges at Temenos, and would you be able to talk about a few of those, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, that's really one of the key reasons why my innovation group was set up, was because, you know, the wider company, certainly when you get to be a bigger organization, you know, a lot of processes kick in to limit risk. You know, a lot of compliance processes and legal processes, and, you know, you can end up missing out on a large part of the available innovation that's out there if you don't kind of, you know, stop and look at some of the things that are out there and take a risk and just see if they're good for us or not. And if they are good for us, you know, let's pursue them. Let's pursue them quickly. Let's break it down and make it much more accessible to the organization. I would say before we had the Innovation Hub, you know, I very much doubt we'd have made as good a progress as we have with the partnership between Temenos and UpSWAT as we have. So that's really our raison d'etre, is to kind of break down those barriers and to make it, you know, a much more fluid kind of ecosystem that will benefit our customers in the long run.
Yeah, no, I've seen larger corporation incorporate a very similar model through and through, like, you know, build, buy, invest, acquire. There are only a handful of those options available. It seems like you've found a good sweet spot in between it all. So Dmitry, from your point of view, you know, we've always talked about there's a level of friction that exists between companies or startups that are trying to move fast, but also on the other hand, trying to partner up with larger institutions such as Temenos in this case, which has a completely different dynamic, the culture, you know, it's not very startup-ish, if you will. How do you see some of those challenges on your end while trying to partner with someone as large as Temenos, and how would you navigate through some of those challenges that exist?
Yeah, very, very wonderful question, because like in startups and in corporate world and among all the people, we are all different, you know, like the example of the Temenos, when I reached Martin in a couple of days, we have a call with Martin, Kemchana, and with Paul, if I'm not mistaken. In the next couple of days, we start signing the documents, meanwhile integrating my solution with the best ever technical people I ever saw in the corporation. So best wishes to the guys, to Seto and Carlos. And at the same time, we are jumping on the call with dozens of executives of Temenos to finalize how we are going to do this together. So we approved the roadmap, what we are going to do and how we are going to do, and signed and finished integration less than in a month. That's fast. Everyone will say fast. That's why I'm saying that not all the corporations are the same, and it's always all about the people. So that's why Martin and his team, by this moment, they are the fastest, including legal part, deciding how to do, what to do exactly, and technical implementation. That's why I completely support Martin Watts, that it's so great that the Temenos could create separate division for these purposes, to start working with the startups. On the top of this, there are some corporations that highly depend on so-called champions. Yes, those people who think and breathe with the innovation, they are executive, they understand both sides of the business. So wonderful example, wonderful example would be MasterCard and their Start Path program. So Sabrina, Ayan, they are the people who understand what the startup expects from the corporation, and at the same time, they understand how the corporation should behave with the startups. And you can launch really fast, you can get the feedback, you can understand what should be done. Banks is tremendously different story. Everything is really small. It's not that level fast. It always demands tons of negotiations, lots of papers to be signed, best compliance process. But there are also some, like, let's say, some examples when the processes can work much better, work very fine. But there are always some space that can be improved. For example, very big group in Europe. It's Raiffeisen Bank. They created a separate division in Russia with wonderful people who have their own software developers, DevOps people, project management people, and they have the budget and the power to make decisions. The same happening, for example, with Capital One in the US. They have very powerful teams that can make the decisions and launch really fast. For example, let's say in Capital One, there is one senior executive, Brad Giulianti. I could reach him through a single message in LinkedIn, because what they are thinking about to do and what we are doing is seems to be matching between each other. So I don't know what will come out of this, but if you write, and if you write to the people who are thinking in the way the innovation should be implemented, if you have something useful for the needs of the banks, and if the bank is ready to change, definitely you can do something together. So just keep trying. And yes, with the corporations, not everything is that fast as you always hope to be.
Right. No, I think both of you brought in an interesting point about like doing the right due diligence and having the right folks who understand mm-hmm. the technology and the business end of things. But that's always better said than done. When it comes to actual execution, there's a lot of mismatch between those skills that are required to, say, vet a startup. So how do you, in your corporation, think about vetting or providing the right due diligence? What are some of the key stakeholders that get involved, Martin, on your end, when you're assessing a startup? Is it like a top-down management, or if you can provide some light on that, that would be amazing.
Yeah, sure. A lot of what we do, you know, we work with a large part of the product organization. You know, it's not us acting alone. You know, we're very well connected with the whole product organization in Temenos. We work a lot with our chief enterprise architect, John Schlesinger, you know, to make sure that whatever we're trying to do fits in with the overall architecture strategy and fits in with all of our products. We also work with our product directors to make sure what we're researching is something that's commercially viable, something that, you know, we think that will add value to banks and will add value to our products. We also work very closely with a part of the organization called our marketplace, which is run by Paul Roberts. And that's really designed to try and break down some of the barriers that Dimitri alluded to. Where, you know, it's kind of difficult to introduce companies like UpSwap to banks, because, you know, they're new, they're kind of small, they've got something very interesting, but, you know, there's so many compliance barriers to kind of get over. So with our marketplace, what we try and do is reduce those barriers by, you know, doing a lot of that due diligence for the banks and you know, making sure that the guys that we introduce are pre-integrated, you know, that they fit well with our architecture and, you know, that they're good to deal with. And we've kind of done that up front, and we can help the banks with the adoption process of taking on these fintechs and these startups without worrying about, you know, have they done enough due diligence and all the rest of it.
Got it. It seems like an agile model, and you already have done some homework before you even start the interaction, whether it be just easing the process of onboarding or reducing the time it takes to provide due diligence and executing faster and move along quicker to partner with some of these startups.
Absolutely. And it's in everyone's interest that, you know, we work out whether, you know, we're of interest to each other, you know, whether there should be a partnership or not. You know, if we're not of interest to each other, you know, let's work that out quickly and not waste everyone's time.
Right. No, I think that's a brilliant approach, because a lot of times we see, you know, large corporations, banks, financial institutions, or tech companies even, that take a lot of time just building out the proof of concept, and they continue to invest more money, more time, and more, you know, stakeholders in it, and eventually have to shut it down. But it seems like it's quite the opposite way of what Temenos is trying to do, which is refreshing to hear. For you, Dimitri, you know, when you go out and partner or trying to build a POC with, say, Temenos, what are some of the questions you have front and center that you're trying to validate, or what are some of the quick wins for you that you want to get out of this relationship?
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, in our business model, we have two types of the, let's say, companies, corporations, financial institutions that we work with. Mm-hmm. Obviously, those that are clients and they pay in us, like the banks, insurance companies, telcos. We just got the first telco. The second type of the interaction is partnership, like with Temenos. So when we launched with Temenos, and by the way, we got the first joint bank in North America, the whole idea is to understand if there is the synergy. Do we understand each other? Because the processes in our companies are obviously different. Can we launch really fast? Because there is right now an opportunity on the market, and the question is who would be the first one there. So when we are launching with Temenos, when we are launching with any core banking system provider, we need to understand how fast can we reach the point when we start earning money together? How fast we are in making our joint value proposition available to the joint clients? And Temenos is a great example that it can be achieved in a couple of months maximum. When we are talking about the banks, it's very important to build relationship. It's not about the sales, it's not about MRR, it's not about ARR. It's about building relationship with those people who can make the decisions and who don't make the decisions. Because sometimes the bank can say you know, but if you could build the relationship with the necessary people, very often this no can turn into yes, but a bit later. No is just the starting point. So when we are reaching the banks, first of all, we're trying to understand if our solution matches their interest. The second thing, if we are in the right time frame. So like, do they need this right now? Is it a painkiller or is it just something that they might be willing to have? The next thing, we are trying to launch the POC in a very convenient way for them. At our stage, the banks prefer to use our solution through their private cloud so that the data that we manage, just imagine, all the transactions of the clients, including for this bank and other banks, all their accounts receivables and payables, all their check and deposit and all other accounts in different banks, all their marketing efforts, all their payroll, all their taxes paid, everything is available through our technology. And in lots of cases, they prefer private cloud approach because SaaS for them might be not the best convenient way from their security, reliability and other perspective. Yeah. So we need to understand that if we pass the integration, would that be fast? If the bank has resources to launch us fast, what they are going to do to make this fast? And when we understand that there is the clear roadmap, that there is a perfect team that can launch us really fast, we dedicate resources to make it convenient for the bank, to make it wonderful for them. And even when we launch the pilot, it's based on KPIs. We can increase sales of the bank by 10% during the first 3 months. And this is really cool. So two ways. With the partnership, we are moving the way to sell together. With the direct sales, we are moving the way to deliver the value to the bank immediately and build the relationship. If in both cases there is damage, that's cool. That happened with Temenos. That happened with Raiffeisen Bank. That happened with other four banks in the US, four out of top 10 biggest ones. And it happens only if really great people from one side of the deal and from another side of the deal.
So are some of these concerns taken off the table right off the bat? Because I know, say, in a startup's case, there's a certain level of eagerness to partner with a large institution because, you know, that's the path to growth. And a lot of times these issues go into the back pocket. They're not front and center. Now you realize, yeah, you can partner and then you can move forward. So how soon do you think a lot of these concerns that the synergies that you have to find out needs to be ironed out? Like, when is it too late to turn around?
if you're talking about the banks, no one wants to be the first one. The biggest challenge for any fintech that is trying to sell to the bank is to come to the first one and get the approval to launch and deliver this value. But when you get this first client, it's much easier to get the second one and the third one and the fourth one and so on. So we started our company 20 months ago, and actually the first bank that we signed, it was in Eastern Europe. We didn't have even a line of code, but because we have a great team that this bank knows, we showed them what we are going to do. We gave them some, let's say, very affordable terms of the deal. They signed with us the document when we didn't have anything. And having their name, which they allowed to use, we could hire the best people to the team, paying them lower salaries than even those that are in Ukraine, because our technical department is based in Ukraine. And when we delivered our product and the bank was successful, we could deliver the KPI, we could show the KPIs and the case study to other bank, and we got like other big banks in Ukraine, other big banks in Russia. We got a couple of banks in Poland, and we start raising our value proposition and scaling it to the US. We came to the US, and what happens there? Again, you need to have the first client, because no one cares about your traction in Europe. So yeah, we started building relationship with the banks, and I have to be transparent with you. COVID-19 helped us a lot. This is disaster for the global economy, but this is something that is pushing corporations to become more innovative. And yeah, when our solution makes the clients switch online, banks switch online, their clients don't need to go to the branches. They can get loan, leasing product, whatever they need completely online. They get insights into what they should improve, and the bank becomes more efficient. That helps us. So that's why, like, we got 4 out of top 10 biggest banks in the US. We got a couple of medium-sized banks. We just got cooperation with 2 biggest global credit bureaus in the US. And with the first one, hopefully we will announce the deal very soon. So while we are not that level sales efficient in the US, we are hiring the people, sales people in the US. We have brilliant technical team in Ukraine, which is a very affordable way to scale the company. We could prove that our technology is needed. We just need to get this first happy client who can allow to name them as the client. Yeah. And this is not that easy to. But after that, everything will be much easier. Though, for example, when COVID started, this is really cool about your countries, US and UK. You support SMBs. In Eastern Europe, no one cares about this. Mm. And lots of innovation products and projects in Eastern Europe, they are freezed. And that's the problem for the banks and for the fintechs. While in the US, everything is booming. In the UK, everything is booming because you support your businesses. SMBs are the blood of the economy. And that's really cool that you support this segment.
Brilliant. Martin, I saw you smiling when we were talking about the first client philosophy. What are your thoughts on that?
I feel that pain. Yeah, I mean, we face that over and over and over again. With every product, with every new release, no bank wants to be first. And it's a classic problem, because as soon as someone goes, as soon as someone actually takes a product, more often than not, it's a runaway success. But no one wants to be that first client. No one wants to take the risk. And sometimes that's a shame, I think, because you miss out on a lot of good stuff by being that risk averse. But I understand why banks are that risk averse. They've got a lot to lose. So it's just something that's part of the industry, something we need to just bear in mind and help them through that process to get that first step on the ladder.
So do you think in that scenario, innovation is sort of a misnomer because you're essentially not innovating, you're fast following, or if you're fast enough to follow?
Yeah, I mean, we see a whole spectrum of approaches to innovation across all of our clients. I mean, we work with loads of different clients, and they all have kind of different approaches. And some of them are right at the edge of the envelope. They just want everything as soon as it's available. And then you've got others who, quite frankly, they're on a really old release and they're happy to stay there and they, don't bug us, that kind of thing. So it's interesting to see all the approaches. But I think the banks that do take the risk and do innovate and do look at companies like UpSwap and the others that are out there really stand to gain an awful lot, because the more you can become digital, the more that you can you can cut your costs, you can increase the money that you can put into innovation, there's a lot to win, I think.
Gotcha. One question that popped up while we were talking about clients and how you look out for these companies like UpSwap or other fintechs or startups in the market. Is there, are there different channels you go through? Is there sort of a pipeline that you establish over a period of time? Because I know you said you discovered UpSwap, and I will come to you, Dimitri, as well for when you say you reached out to Temenos, but I would start with you, Martin. How do you look at the landscape when you're looking at startups?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So, there's a couple of different routes, really. So firstly, I'm not alone. So there are other people within Temenos who are kind of looking out for these companies that might be of interest to us. So our chief enterprise architect I mentioned earlier, John Schlesinger, he's always scouring the market to see what's out there, to see what's going on. So he introduced a lot of the companies that we start looking at. Also, our marketplace is another kind of avenue for introductions to these different companies. So the guy who runs marketplace, Paul Roberts, he's kind of constantly on lookout for new innovative companies to add to our marketplace. And often he will come to me to say, you know, I've got this company, I don't know if they're right for us or not, you know, can we do a proof of concept to establish that and how it would work? And I suppose lastly, you know, myself and my team, we're always on the lookout ourselves. So you know, we're constantly, you know, looking at LinkedIn, looking at email digests, you know, technical websites and looking out for anyone that might be of interest, anyone with something different, anyone with something that might augment our products and really add value to our customers and us ultimately. And, you know, it's worth bearing in mind that we are a banking software company and we really only want to plow our own furrow. You know, we don't want to do everything that's out there. We want to stick to the banking and we want to get these other solutions that are out there that kind of add value to us, but maybe they're not quite banking. You know, they kind of bleed out into other areas, but they are something that banks are interested in. So that's really how we do it. So lots of different strands.
And Dimitri, how do you scope out when you're looking to partner? Is it primarily cold email through introductions? Because a lot of times we see founders are looking to partner, and then there are also stories they just reach out cold email. 90% of the time, there's no way to communicate because there's no soft lead into it. So how do you think about partnering there?
It's all, again, it's always about relationship. Unfortunately, neither me nor my team, we never finished US universities, not native speaking people. For us, it's a little bit more difficult probably comparing with our peers in the same industry, being the same age old as the company. That's why, for example, our path to the US was through acceleration program, very cool acceleration program. So it's Skydeck, Berkeley Skydeck, which was created by and got the money from Sequoia, Mayfield, Sierra, and other top VC. The mentors and people coming there are from Wells Fargo and other big institutions, biggest venture funds and so on. And by building a relationship with them, they connect you with the relevant people. So for example, that is how it happened with us when we met the guys from Wells Fargo Accelerator. Ryan, for example, very wonderful person who is managing our team in this program. On the top of this, how I met, for example, BBVA. This is my unsuccessful story with the previous startup, which is actually not successful from financial perspective, but we gave all the money back to the VC and that they invested in us. But it gave me huge experience. So with my previous company, we were one of the winners of BBVA Open Innovation Challenge, if I'm not mistaken, yeah? Right. In Madrid every year. Yeah. So I came there, I met Javier Donoso-Ribuelta, who is the head of global CRM. Later I met their team and we couldn't launch cooperation with my previous company. But let's say we are in a very good relationship regarding the new one. So I always can ask the feedback. I can always ask the advice. And there are lots of interesting things happening with this. So it's always about the people. Like Rohan, we were introduced to each other thanks to Shen Nen from Wells Fargo. Yeah, like she connected us. And this is the chance for me to talk with you, to show what we do, explain what we do to the people that are listening to this podcast. On the top of this, I can say that everything that we do is coming from in-person, let's say, warm introductions. As I previously told, I got in touch with Brad Giganti from Capital One just by sending an invitation on LinkedIn explaining what we do. And the same happened, for example, with Finastra. I truly respect CEO of Finastra, Hannes Liebe, who is one of the best and the most experienced corporate executives that is a big fan of our company. And the same I wrote him on LinkedIn. And so I can say that this is a very efficient tool to explain what you do and jump on the call. But 40% of the deals that we have, including Terminus, happen to this cold messages on LinkedIn.
Interesting.
And LinkedIn is much more efficient comparing with email in any case.
That's interesting to know, because it seems like there's always a method to the madness when you try to look at backwards, but in the moment of, you don't necessarily see it outright. So you got to keep applying various channels. You said accelerator models, you went through LinkedIn, you got some soft connections. So multiple different avenues to see what works and over a period of time.
By the way, mm-hmm. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, please.
Money 2020. So this is where we got both credit bureaus. This is where we got introductions with lots of very important banks for us. So Money 2020 is definitely the place where you should go. But we had unfair competitive advantage. We were pitching there on the stage. I was one of the winners, let's say finalists of the conference. So lots of bankers heard what we do. But conferences, industry-specific conferences, is a great channel to introduce the company. Not even to sell, but start building relationship.
Right. So the old handshake model still works. So even though everything is going digital, personal relationships matter. Brilliant. So I want to switch gears a little bit, right? Oftentimes we talk about startups partnering up and everything looks like bright and rosy on the outside, but there's obviously a ton of failures that have taken you, that you've had to face along the way. So Dimitri, what are some of those bigger failures or hurdles for a better term you encountered along the way and what you learned from it?
The most, like, you never know what you're going to face on startup until you try. So until you try, you think that that would be actually easier than you think, no matter to what you are prepared. So, like, be ready for the worst, especially if you have kids, family, wife. You always need to travel. You need to relocate. For the last 5 years, we changed 6 countries. With my previous startup and with this one. But if coming to the mistakes, there are lots of them, obviously, lots of mistakes. But this is the normal path. By making mistakes, we become smarter. We don't make the most important not to do the same mistakes again and again. But in my personal rating, let's say, the biggest mistake, never take Russian money as investments. Russian money, yeah. Like, I divide Russian money into three categories, like very, very Russian money, Russian money. And
I want you to dive a bit more deep. Provide some color to that.
In our case, because mentality is different, yes? Like, the way that the business is done in the Western countries is not that the way the business is done in Eastern Europe. Very Russian money, it doesn't mean that these are bad people. That just means that there are some risks, not obvious risks. And the way that the business is done is not the one, not according to those principles which you use when you want to build a huge company. There are some Russian money, just Russian money, not bad. They're trying to scale. Maybe they made some investments, something is okay, but still this is not the preferable way. And there are some very nice funds, very nice people that made investments with the Western funds. They passed so-called venture compliance. And these are people, great. Yeah, please, you can take their money. But my personal experience, very, very Russian money is not the best option to grow the business. So don't make my mistakes. The second thing, as I told you, I failed with my previous company because of lots of mistakes. Yes, startup is not the business. At the beginning, especially when there are no processes and all this stuff. But if you see that there are lots of challenges from the whole beginning with your partner, if you argue too much with each other, if you have absolutely different vision on the way the business should go, especially if you're not sitting having these problems in the same room from day one, probably you shouldn't do this business together. That doesn't mean that you are bad or someone of you is bad. They just mean that you are not those people who can create something huge together. And that mistake costed me three years. That gave me huge experience. And the most important, not to do the same mistake. So that's why in my new company, everything is completely different. I understood whom I should look for my business. I understood how we should do the business, what types of the psychology should be in my partners. And it seems everything working really nice. I don't have any of those problems that unfortunately I had in the previous business.
And that's interesting, Dimitri, you point out, right? Because I've seen this as a recurring theme. When your co-founder is not on the same page, it becomes an inherent hurdle to grow your business because you're continuously fighting over the smallest of things and the alignment is not there internally. And that acts as a much bigger detractor than, say, the idea of partnership or raising capital in itself, because the two people who are supposed to run the company together are just not on the same page. Fascinating. Thank you for sharing that, by the way. I've never experienced Russian money or Russian investors so far, but I'll definitely keep that note in mind. Appreciate it. Martin, I think the similar challenges sort of exist on the corporate side of thing as well, right? Just whether it be just starting up an innovation arm or scoping out for ventures, whether it be, you know, the bureaucratic channels that are set up across the firm that acts as the layers of friction. What would be some of the challenges that you'd say you face from an innovation or partnership or a venturing perspective? And what were some of your biggest learnings from there?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, Temenos is a very entrepreneurial company. You know, I've worked there for 20 years, and the one constant I say in that time is change. And it was quite a small company when I joined it, and now we're kind of 8,500 odd staff, and you know, about $1 billion of revenue. So it's grown an awful lot in that time. And one of the things that's kind of evolved in that time is the kind of mesh of processes and approvals and boards and that kind of stuff, which are all designed to make sure that we do everything well and that we do the right things. But all of that kind of process is a bit too heavy for the kind of work that we look to do. You know, if we're evaluating, you know, a company like UpSWAT and we want to reach a decision as to whether they're right for Temenos or not within, you know, weeks, not months, then we have to kind of cast off the yoke of those processes and we have to kind of take a much more streamlined approach. So when we first set up the Innovation Hub, we spent quite a while, myself and John Schlesinger, who's really probably our biggest sponsor, the chief enterprise architect of our company. And we hammered out a process that was, you know, strong enough to make sure that we were focused on the right things, but light enough to just not get in the way. So, you know, if you're doing an 8-week POC, you don't want to have to do a lot of form filling and all the rest of it, because at the end of the day, at the end of the 8 weeks, what you're talking about might be thrown away, because, you know, if it's something that's not of interest to both parties, then we're not going to pursue it. So we kind of made sure that we had the right balance of making sure that we do the right thing for the company and making sure that we don't weigh down what we're trying to do too much to get in the way.
Brilliant. Yep. I think having those streamlined processes are our biggest detractors as well, that I've noticed personally in my field of work too. And you know, the current pandemic has kind of made us all think about things a lot differently. How has that kind of either slowed down or accelerated some of the things that you were doing prior to COVID-19, and how do you see that evolving or changing over a period of time? And this question is essentially open to both you, Dimitri, and Martin.
Probably I will start. So for us, this pandemic, if not to think about the people that were hurt by this situation, is a really cool thing for the business. So for the last couple of months, we got 2 acquisition offers, and one by one, they were really close to each other. We have proposals regarding corporate investments. Very active. Like for corporates, I believe this is the perfect timing to invest in fintechs and lots of other startups, because the world is changing, and those fintechs that are growing, this is the perfect sign that this is something new, that it will grow after the crisis. So from my perspective, lots of things are changing right now. The only question if the company managed by this team is the one company, like is the one that will grow. And in my business, we are growing in this way. We are moving in this direction, especially with the right partners. So this call today is managed by you with two representatives, one of the startups and one from the corporates. Why? Because when the companies, small fintechs, are launching with the corporations, that proves that they are doing something wrong. And this is really exciting. As we discussed 10, 15 minutes ago, the most important to prove the success story with the first client. In our case, we have this, but we become much stronger having the right partner on the board of our company. And when the world is changing so fast, when the banks need to think how they should survive and adjust their business to the current changes. On the top of this, if they are thinking, should we invest something in this particular company or not? And you are coming having the logo of Temenos or the logo of the credit bureau or the logo of someone else, this is much easier to launch and to prove. So despite the fact that lots of things are changing, if you can adjust your value proposition, your business model, if you find the right people on your road and they support you, this is the perfect timing.
So do you not fear being shortchanged in terms of getting a lower acquisition offer, for instance, or what you could have previously gotten in a normal economy? Is that something of concern at all or no?
Actually, yes. Like we see they're using this period of time to reduce the valuation of their startups and they are more risk aware. This is understandable. While the corporates, actually, no. The company that recently made us an offer to dive into due diligence and discuss their possible acquisition, they recently bought the startup of my friend. And she's Russian, by the way. And before diving into this process, before saying yes or no, because we didn't say anything yet, I asked her opinion. What does she think? And if her company was bought according to the nice valuation, let's say, that she believes is okay. And she's saying yes. So it's not about only sales of the company. It's about with whom you are going to work. Because when you are a young company, the corporation buying you, they're not buying the business. According to their principles, this is not the business. Still, this is the team and the technology that can be scalable. So, and if the founders decide to sell their company, they will also consider who will become the boss. Yes? If it is convenient for you to work with this boss, yeah, if you can get used to the corporation processes, if your team feels convenient with this new boss, yeah, and for how long are you going to stay with this corporation? Because between us three, I believe you understand that any founder that is trying to create second or the third company, they don't think that they will stay for incorporation for many years. They will try to create something new and new and new again and again and again. But corporates, by the way, if they invest in your company, they are not that level, let's say, they're not trying to reduce your valuation as much as possible, unlike VC. Because different business models. For corporation, this is the business that is perfectly matching their corporate strategy. For the VC, this is one of the horses on the stadium that should run to the end. And it doesn't matter that nine others will die on the road. So yeah, that's the difference.
Right, yeah, no, I agree. For the corporate, it's more about the partnership and seeing some value come out. For VC, it's a very quantitative approach of seeing the returns on the investment that they've gotten. So it makes a ton of sense. Martin, what's your thoughts?
So I think the COVID crisis has really got a short, a medium, and a long-term effect. So in the short term, we've seen our clients, you know, they've got a lot to focus on. You know, they're being asked by governments to lend out money to anyone who needs it. So that they're suddenly being inundated with masses of loan requests. And depending on where they are with the digital journey, you know, either their processes and their systems will be equipped to handle that increase in loan requests, or they won't. So there's, you know, the ones that are equipped, you know, they're making hay, and the ones that maybe, you know, that they're not quite so digital are struggling, and that, you know, their focus is completely on solving that problem and not on, you know, what else they might do. In the medium term, there's no doubt, as Dimitri says, that this is a massive structural driver for change. You know, if banks didn't realize that, you know, they need to be digital, they need to, you know, need to have straight through processing, they need to have unassisted channels, you know, it's a massive wake up call to say, this is what you need, because if you haven't got it, then, you know, it's not looking good. And I think in the longer term, you know, it almost becomes about survival, because, you know, you're just not going to be around if you can't compete in this kind of landscape. And I think our job is basically to help them on that journey and introduce them to people like Dimitri's company and, you know, just help them get there and help them build the best solutions they can for their customers that, you know, the customers can use regardless of whether we're locked down or not, or you know, whatever happens in the world, they can get the banking services they need.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, I think just providing that right support network and, you know, identifying those startups that are bound for success down the lane. And as you said, like, this is a big opportunity for large corporation, banks, financial institutions, legacy-based, you know, system-based corporations to revamp their models and think more long-term and how their business is going to be impacted. And probably a ripe opportunity to partner with fast-moving startups such as UpSwat and many others. Brilliant. Dimitri, a question. Looking back at your journey, what would be the one thing you might want to change and you would want to do differently, let's say?
Regarding the business, two things. So regarding the business, we started our company with the focus on SMB only, but a couple of months we understood that, there is mid-market business companies and our technology perfectly matches this segment. So maybe it's sometimes not for self-employed and very micro businesses, but upper level of SMB and mid-market is a perfect match. So this is something that we understood only after 18 months, probably. This is one thing, because, you know, like in the banks, the departments are divided. And if you talk with SMB, they take care only about SMB. If you talk with mid-market guys, they think about mid-market. Right. The second thing, it's more probably about me personally. First of all, I had to maybe hire someone who will teach me American English, because in schools in Ukraine, we learn British English. And if you travel a lot, you take some English from that part of the world, some English from that part of the world. And that's the problem. I need to change this in me. On the top of this, we spent a lot of money and time for me personally to stay in the US, because I'm not a citizen of the US. And I applied for O-1 visa. I got this O-1 visa. And right now I'm getting green card. Yes. The mistake in my case that I applied for O-1 visa being in the US. If you get O-1 visa in the US, you can't leave the country. So that's the problem. Luckily, COVID-19 happened. Right.
so you don't have to leave the country.
But this is so stupid situation. If you apply for O-1 visa, like for talented people to do the business in the US, outside right. of the US, you can go and cross the border. But right. if you take the status of the visa inside of the US, you can't go outside of the US. If you go, you need to apply again. So that was awful, and that was my mistake while listening to the lawyers, that please pay us for one visa and later green card, and that would be better, blah, blah, blah. No, do green card immediately from the day one. Hire the people to help you to adjust your English, because right. this is your tool to do the business. And yes, and again, lawyers probably. We had a huge mistake with one gentleman who forgot to send one small paper when we were incorporated in the US to mm-hmm. the IRS. And this one small paper costed me tons of taxes mm-hmm. just because of one guy who forgot to send the paper. So we had to pay the taxes for our shares from the day one and wow. after filling in 409A evaluation. And that was awful story. So please pay more attention to the lawyers, to the people you work with. All of us, we do mistakes, but it's right. very bad mistake cost a lot of money.
No, appreciate you sharing that personal stories, right? Immigration is definitely an issue in this country, and it's continuing to become even bigger under the pandemic situation and the given administration that exists, for good or bad, it's obviously debatable. And also, yeah, you just got to be extra careful when you're filing for taxes because it can negatively impact your things.
One paper.
Martin, I know there's, you know, it's a continuously evolving process in a large corporation trying to, you know, finesse the innovation process. What have you seen as being the biggest, if you had control right now, let me reframe it. If you had control right now of the entire process, how would you do it differently and for the better moving forward?
Do you mean the innovation process?
The innovation process, yes.
I think there's two things. So the first thing is I would try and remove a lot of the friction. So I think, you know, sometimes, you know, you can put too many barriers in front of, you know, getting some good ideas to market. And for me, innovation is all about getting invention to market. You know, if you don't get it to market, it doesn't exist. You know, invention for the fun of it is pointless. So that's the first thing I'd say is, you know, try and reduce the processes to, you know, just what's necessary and no more. And the second thing I would say is, you know, really focus on the go-to-market process and, you know, basically nurturing these precious ideas and the new products and getting them out to market. And I think that's part of the process that sometimes gets neglected. So, you know, we develop some really great products and then off it goes. And it really needs someone to kind of nurture it on the way, help customers to adopt it, help the field to sell it, help the field to service that product, help our partners to implement the product, all of that kind of thing. So I think that those are the two areas I'd focus on is reducing friction and, you know, helping the product on the way after it's been launched.
Brilliant. You know, some absolutely fascinating insights from both of you. Unfortunately, we are coming to an end of our dedicated time. But before we head out, how can anyone listening to this podcast get in touch with you guys?
Oh, well, I would echo Dimitri's earlier comments that for me, LinkedIn is a good avenue of approach because, you know, if you approach me by email, you know, you're going to get lost in a sea of an awful lot of email communication. Whereas if you approach me on LinkedIn, you know, I can see who you are. You know, I can see whether you're of interest and you've got an opportunity to explain what you want to talk about. So I would say that's the best way to get hold of me.
Brilliant. Oh, regarding me, any channel, guys. write me. If you need LinkedIn, write me. If you need WhatsApp or anything else, it's 925-968-5900. So my email is dndanielnancy@ups.com. And yeah, LinkedIn, Dmitry Norenko. So if you find Martin, I believe Martin will say how to find me.
Oh, absolutely. I'll have the information in the notes.
I know how to find him.
Yeah. No, guys, this has been fantastic. I really enjoyed our conversation. You know, as much as I would like to keep continuing, we'll probably have another session sometime down the lane. This was fascinating and I really appreciate your time on this.
Thanks a lot for the
interview.
Yeah.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Yep. I think this was an amazing podcast because here we got to learn so much about not just what an entrepreneur's journey is, but also how large corporations look at fintech startups and up-and-coming startups and how to partner with them. So this was a win-win for me. And if you'd like to listen to more of such podcasts where we bring in multiple guests from multiple different areas of expertise, please reach out and I'll arrange for a lot of those. But this is the end for today. And until next time, namaste.